It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Has time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Good morning, everybody. The Giants are 0-3 after a very disappointing loss to the Carolina Panthers yesterday, getting shut out in the worst loss of the Tom Coughlin era, 38-0. Lance had the stat on the pregame show on Sunday. The last 0-3 team to make the postseason were the Buffalo Bills in 1998. Next week, the Giants have to head to Kansas City to take on the 3-0 Chiefs, a team, by the way, that has an even more formidable front seven than the Carolina Panthers. And right now, it's hard to see a silver lining, and we're not going to try to give you one this morning. Lance Meadow, good morning.
Good morning, John, and I wish we had something better to discuss after a performance like that yesterday. Clearly, it was a continuation of some of the issues that we saw come to the forefront in weeks one and weeks two. The offensive line just has not done a good job, not just in pass protection, but also in establishing the run. As a result, David Wilson and company not having many holes to work with. And the bottom line is Eli Manning is taking his fair share of hits, which is a very big concern because pass protection has never been an issue for the decade that he's been here about. And the fact that he's now getting hit time and time again, you're worried that he can last 16 games.
Fair share is an understatement. He's taking way too many hits. And quite frankly, if this continues, and again, next week against a very good Kansas City defensive front, it could get worse. I know it's hard to think that, but it could get worse.
No, it can. Look at what the Chiefs did to the Eagles.
And you're right. At some point, and Carl Banks and Howard Cross talked about this on the radio broadcast yesterday, those hits are going to catch up, and he's going to get blindsided, and he doesn't see something coming. Now, Eli did a good job yesterday of getting down and avoiding major contact on some of these sacks, but eventually he's going to get blindsided. He's going to get a helmet in the ribs. God forbid he's going to get a helmet to the head on one of these hits when he keeps getting hit, and he will get hurt. He can get a hand on a helmet. He can break his hand. Any number of these things could possibly happen if the Giants don't clean up their offensive line mess. And right now, you can't even point to one person. Look, Will Beatty had a terrible game, especially for a guy that's your franchise left tackle. That's unacceptable. But your rookie Justin Pugh got beat. Chris Knee got beat. David Boss and Kevin Booth gave up sacks themselves. Everybody on that offensive line can get a finger pointed at them. David Wilson can for pass protection. Darrell Scott can for pass protection. Throw Brandon Myers into that mix too. Nobody's doing their job. And we talked about it all preseason and the first couple weeks of the regular season. You can talk about how all these guys haven't played a ton of games together at these particular positions. You know what? Enough. I'm not buying it anymore. This isn't a communication thing. This isn't a chemistry thing. And I'm quoting Tom Coughlin in his postgame press conference yesterday. This is guys getting flat out beat one-on-one. And right now what worries me is that the problem you have right now is that this offensive line isn't talented enough on an individual basis. And you can figure out ways to fix things. It's hard to fix a problem when the guys on your roster that you have the dedicated financial assets to are not good enough to give your quarterback and superstar wide receiver core a chance to ply their trade. And that's the problem right now you're looking at with the New York Football Giants.
Yeah, they invested in all these guys across the board, as you just mentioned, John. They re-signed Will Beatty. They re-signed Kevin Booth. You put a first-round pick in Justin Pugh. You expect instantaneous results. It's not as if these guys were just brought in out of the blue. They've played not just games with each other. They've played seasons with each other. To me, what was absolutely inexcusable is that if you're going to tell me the Panthers are going to bring six or seven guys, I can understand you get beat sometimes, John. Four-man rush yesterday, time and time again. Greg Hardy ate that Giants offensive line for lunch. He had three of those seven sacks. Most people probably never heard of Greg Hardy prior to this game. I mean, they put these guys on the map. time and time again, this linebacker group and that front four just dominated the Giants at the line of scrimmage.
Hey, look, Hardy had a good year last year. Double-digit sacks, I think 9 sacks in his last 9 games, something like that. But no, he's not a household name, no question about it. And they weren't even doing tricks. There weren't a ton of stunts in there. You saw bull rushes from Charles Johnson and Greg Hardy again and again, pushing Will Beattie and Justin Pugh into the laps of Eli Manning. And if he whenever he tries to step up in the pocket, what happened? You had star Lotu Lele there, or Kawan Short there, a tackle, collapsing the inside of that line. And look, there are things you can do, and I was a little disappointed you didn't see some of the adjustments early where you do more three-step drops, more get rid of the ball quicker, Carl Banks brought up throwing some flare passes to running backs out of the backfield. And all that stuff works great. But that stuff's more effective, like you mentioned, against blitzes. Because then you don't have linebackers in the middle of the field covering these guys because they're coming on the quarterback. The problem you have is when you're only rushing 4, you still have 7 guys in coverage. And it's not like the 4 defensive linemen are beating the 5 Giants offensive linemen. They're doing some max protect stuff. You have 4 guys beating 6 blockers, sometimes 7. You can't win football games like that.
That's why the front 4 for the Panthers yesterday, John, was a blessing in disguise for that secondary. We talked all throughout this week, all through the pregame, about how if you look at this matchup on paper, this is going to be a game where the Giants are going to air it out. Eli Manning's going to have plenty of time. Victor Cruz, Nix, Randall, the list goes on and on. They didn't even have an opportunity to test this secondary because the front 4 was so dominant that the Giants couldn't try to expose some of the weaknesses in that secondary.
And I want to bring up one other thing before we get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513, and we'll take your calls to 11 today, maybe even a little bit later if you guys keep calling in. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We'll read your tweets on there, reply to you on Twitter as well. I was very disappointed, Lance. And look, this game's on the offense. There's no question about it. I'm not having that debate. However, I would have thought that after a first half, where you're down 17-0, and the game's not over. You're down 3 scores. The Panthers, as we talked about on the pregame show on the radio, have been renowned for blowing fourth quarter leads. They're darn good at it. 10 of their 21 losses in Ron Rivera's tenure there have come via blown fourth quarter leads. So you're still in the game here, okay? And the defense comes out, and they allow, I believe it was an 80-yard drive for a touchdown.
Opening of the third quarter.
And you saw very little enthusiasm, very little energy, and very little fight, as Carl Banks put it on the radio. And I would have thought that after such a embarrassing first half, somebody would have stood up in that locker room, not a coach now, I'm talking about a player, and started getting people fired up, yelling at guys, getting them excited, getting them ready to go. So you at least come out with some fury in that second half. There was nothing. Nothing.
And the Panthers were beating up this Giants defense more so on the ground, John, I would say, than through the air. And that had been an area that you would hope they would have shored up. At least it was present in week one. Dallas did not run over this Giants defense. The Broncos had some decent runs with Sean Moreno yesterday. D'Angelo Williams had his way. They could not stop the run, and that's an issue because this was the biggest thing that you needed to address in the offseason, and now they're back to square one.
And the other thing they had done well this season was stopping plays over the top, the big plays down the field. That ceased in this game as well.
Ted Ginn, Brandon LaFell beat the corners.
And Ryan Mundy came up on that one play where Aaron Ross thought he was going to have help on that deep post again. So, obviously, folks, not a whole lot of good. We'll try to talk you off the ledge a little bit as we take your calls on Big Blue Kickoff Live at 201-939-4513. D in Atlanta has been holding for a while, wanted to be first, and he has his wish. D, good morning.
Hey, good morning, y'all. How y'all doing?
I'm doing all right, D. Go ahead.
Y'all covered pretty much everything. I just wanted to just say this one thing, and then I'm get off. But
sure.
I think the spark you all talking about, I was looking for that too. I look at the Giants website and the post-game interviews, and it seems like nobody's upset about losing. It's like, we lost. We try again next week. I don't see, like I would like to see, I know it's not in Eli's character, but I like to see him get mad up in their face like Tom Brady did, you know? And I think that'll be the spark the Giants need to maybe be more competitive. I ain't gonna say it'll turn the season around, but be competitive. If I don't mind losing, let's just be competitive and give it your best because you're not gonna win every game. The league has gotten real competitive now. It's not only easy win probably Jacksonville. Other than that, everybody is competing this year. So that's all I wanted to say.
All right, D. Thanks a lot for the call. And look, I could tell you these guys do care, and the locker room post-game was somber. It was sad. It was depressed. But he's right. I didn't sense a lot of anger. And, you know, after a game like that, maybe you usually don't get a whole lot of anger. You'll get a little more anger when you blow a close game or blow a fourth quarter lead, something like that. But, look, this team cares. However, you would have liked to see something. I don't really care about post-game, to be honest with you, during the game, where somebody, you know, stands up and says, no, I don't want to take this anymore. Carl Banks said it on the air. He goes, look, I don't want anybody to fight or punch somebody or do something, but how about showing a little something where you stand up for yourself and, you know, show a little bit of pride? And you just didn't see any of that during the game.
Well, to me, John, based on history, it seems that this is the type of team that does that stuff behind closed doors at players-only meetings. I mean, let's be honest. Outside of Antrell Roll, not a lot of these guys are very vocal when it comes to the media in terms of airing out their dirty laundry.
Sure.
You know, Roll is the one guy that he'll put it out there, and he'll show his disgust. He'll show the fact that, listen, we've got immense room for improvement. Outside of that, you know, D just referred to Eli Manning. Eli Manning's not that type of player. He just never has been. I don't think that's going to change overnight.
It's not.
Even though this is the time to call for it.
You would like to see just somebody, even if it's not leading other people, just on an individual basis, show a little bit of fire. And, you know, Howard Cross is telling me from the sideline that Hakeem Nicks was imploring the offensive line to give more. David Wilson was imploring them to give more. They were trying, but it just never translated to the field of play. 201-939-4513. Kendall's in Canada. Kendall, what's going on, pal?
Hey, how you doing?
We're doing, could be better, Kendall. Could be, got to be honest with you.
Well, you remember my question from Friday was, are we delusional? I guess we answered that question, because remember I said it was a show-me game?
It was, yes.
And we talked a little bit about, is this team as good as we thought it was? Where are they at? So I guess now we know. Because, like you said, you can't have any more excuses after three games. Where are we? What are we doing? The only solace that I can take from Sunday's game is we are in the NFL, in the NFC least, not the East, because everybody else lost except for the Cowboys. And sad but true, I don't really think that you're going to be out of the playoffs in the NFC East until you get to 8 losses.
I agree with you. That's probably true. You might be able to win the division at 9-7, but at 0-3, the Giants, who have been an inconsistent team at best over the past few years, are going to have to go the rest of the way now 9-4 in order to get to that 9-7 record, and that includes a win next week at Kansas City, which, like we've said at the start of the broadcast, is going to be a very, very difficult game. So are you mailing in the season? You're certainly not. But it's really going to be tough now for this Giants team to put something together. But even putting that aside, Kendall, the worry here is looking at the talent, looking at this team and how they're playing. Do you even see a way for them to get to 9 wins with the way this offensive line is playing? I certainly don't.
Well, since I started calling in, I've been quite clear on my feelings. If you don't keep Eli upright, you're not going to win. It's simple as that. And that played out yesterday. The poor guy wouldn't even have a second to change his mind before he was on the ground. Like, you're right. The sad part about it is they let Carr go. If we keep going down this way, Curtis Painter is going to start games this year because he is going to get his head tore off.
It is a scary situation, and Kendall, appreciate the phone call. The last thing you want to do is put your quarterback, who has had so much success through the air in the last couple of seasons, in a precarious situation where he could get hurt. And
he's your franchise.
Yeah, it's as simple as that. And let's be honest. You know, everybody wants to point to in seasons past, John, the Giants' offense has been built against the run and around the run. Right now, this is a passing offense. That's what the last couple of seasons have proven.
And that's fine. You can win the Super Bowl as a passing offense. Nothing's wrong with that.
But if Eli Manning gets hurt, you can throw that game plan out the window.
If you can't protect Eli Manning, you can't have a passing offense.
So you need to make sure that he has at least 5 seconds to throw the ball down the field, something that was not present yesterday.
He'd take 3 at this point. 5.
Just about.
5's living in the life of luxury as a quarterback. Give him 3.5 or 4. He'll, you know, get balloons and throw a party.
You know, if you have productive tight ends and running backs, sometimes you could cover up your issues on the offensive line. The most troubling aspect is they don't even have productive running backs and tight ends in terms of pass protection right now that could even cover up the issues of the offensive line.
And you can also run things like draw plays and screen passes to slow opposing defensive lines down. What two plays don't the Giants run well again? Oh, yeah, screens and draws.
That about sums it up.
So there really aren't a lot of answers here, Lance. I don't know what the answers are. I really don't.
And we may field some phone calls of people saying, listen, plug this offensive lineman, plug this offensive lineman, and that's not going to change anything overnight.
Though, quite frankly, at this point, could it hurt?
It can't, but let's be honest. Bringing in Brandon Mosley, you know, recommending you shuffle a guard to a tackle.
Who, by the way, was hurt yesterday and wasn't even active.
So I don't see that being the biggest solution. I mean, it's a nice recommendation, but if they continue to play musical chairs, you know, it may do patchwork at this point, but long term, it's not going to solve anything.
The guys that are starting now beat out the guys that are on the bench. They were better than these guys in the preseason and in practice.
So what makes you think they're going to pull a 180 right now?
201-939-4513. Let's stay in Canada. We'll go to Toronto this time and say what's up to Owen. Owen, go ahead, pal. Yeah, you're on.
Sorry about that.
That's right. No worries.
Okay, so first off, First off, I just want to start off, Sal. That was just a terrible, terrible game. They couldn't get the running game going. I mean, David Wilson, I don't know. I was so excited about this guy. We saw his flashes at the end of the season. It's just so disappointing. I mean, it's just so disappointing.
Oh, and
like,
you could have a genetic combination of Barry Sanders, Jim Brown, Walter Payton, and Emmitt Smith back there, and they couldn't run behind this offensive line right now.
I know the line has been terrible, so you can't fully blame it, but, like, just the whole situation with the offensive line and just everything about it's just a disaster. Eli's just getting smacked around, and like you guys said at the beginning of the show, I don't think he's lasting the full 16 if he's getting sacked 7 times a game. It's absolutely ridiculous. And I know the Panthers, like, they don't have the best, they're not the best defense. And, like, he had got sacked 7 times. So, I mean, I just find it absolutely ridiculous. Like, I don't know what they're going to do, but it was just horrendous yesterday. 38-0. I couldn't believe it. I was actually thinking they had a chance to get their first win. I was so excited to see what they do. And then they go out and just lose in that type of fashion. And I just want to say a funny stat I found out yesterday. The New York Jets had more penalty yards than the Giants had offensive yards yesterday.
Owen, you're 100% right, buddy. Thanks for the call. And here's a stat that I like. 18 first half yards for the Giants yesterday. Do you remember how the Giants achieved their first down of the game? Think about it for a second.
Eli Manning scrambled for 14 yards.
So other than an Eli Manning 14-yard run, the Giants gained 4 net yards in the first half. 4. Computate that for a second. 4.
Unreal.
4.
Well, Fox put up a stat, and I think Bob Papa referred to this on the broadcast. I don't remember the exact number of plays, but it was at least over 15 that netted 0 or negative yards in the first half.
And we went through that last week of the Giants, I think, 19 runs last week, 6 were for negative or 0 yards. If you're going backwards, it's not helping you. And then you get the 3rd and longs, and all of a sudden, pin back the ears, rush the passer. Bye-bye, Eli Manning.
Well, you're going to go backwards when they get penetration, the defensive line, and by the time Eli Manning hands the ball off to the running back, he's already met by a defender. How could you pick up positive yardage under those situations?
201-939-4513. All the glamour and money and credit goes to the skill position guys. If you don't have those big grunts in that offensive line to protect them and give them the opportunity to play, having David Wilson the first-round pick doesn't matter. Having Akeem Nicks first-round pick, Eli Manning, doesn't matter. Having Brandon Myers catching 80 balls last year for the Raiders doesn't matter. Having Victor Cruz, you know, being a newly contracted superstar doesn't matter. The offensive line is the foundation of the football team. Everything else was built upon their success. And right now, the Giants' foundation is crumbling.
And to make things more complicated with respect to the offensive line, John, Henry Hynoski fractured shoulder. Now Bear Pasco returns to fullback. You lose your best blocking tight end as that extra offensive lineman.
Larry Donald better get ready to play and quick. 201-939-4513. Not to mention, your best lead blocker for your running game, too. Granted, Henry wasn't playing his best football because he was still coming back from that knee injury, but still, when he's 100%, better lead blocker than Bear Pascoe. Pascoe, better in-line blocker as a tight end. Let's go to Vic up in Connecticut. Vic, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Morning, Vic.
Still room on the ledge, or?
There's room.
It is filling up quickly. Soon we're going to start shifting people over to the GW Bridge.
All right, move over. I'm getting up there.
Okay.
All right, well, first of all, I'll say that it's too bad that we didn't have the two stars from last year's game, but they're both not around, at least temporarily or whatever, and we know who one of them is, but I'm not going to mention it.
Uh-oh.
I'm gonna get you upset.
Yeah, do
but
not get Schmelk upset,
Brown.
That's dangerous territory.
Vic, honestly, you could have put the entire 86 Giants roster in their prime on this team yesterday. If that offensive line was out there, it wouldn't have mattered.
I think you can put a dress on a pig, but it's still a pig.
Oink, oink.
You know, I won't go on and on because you said it so eloquently at the beginning, John. But I think the team appears to be too proud to improve sometimes. You know, we always talk about the New York Giants and how, you know, how proud of an organization they are, how they pride themselves on doing things. And I don't disagree with that because they are where they are because of it. But it seems like they've been successful in the past, but now it's time to kind of make a change a little bit. Not wholesale changes by any means. But what concerns me is that even our kicking game seems to be failing. I mean, you know, Josh Brown, the stat comes up, he's 4 for 4, bink, it goes wide, whatever. Now, Weatherford suddenly can't punt the ball to the sideline with any distance. When your special teams game falls down, I think you're really in trouble. But I really believe that the coaches have lost this team a little bit, and not just over the last 3 games, but over the last 5 games, if you include Atlanta and Baltimore last year.
Okay.
And I don't think our coaches are bad. I'm not going to get on the Kevin Gilbride bashing thing. That's not where I want to be. And I think Tom Coughlin is one of the best men that I've ever, you know, seen on TV, and his quotes are always great. But I think with Andy Reid in Philly, you know, a great coach, a great guy, I think at some point, 10 years, I think you start to lose your players a little bit. I think the message becomes a little diluted.
But Vic, do you think this is really a motivational thing where Coach Coughlin's not reaching the team? I mean, I don't think this offensive line is failing to open up holes in the running game or protect Eli Manning because they're not being properly motivated.
I think the offensive line stinks, first of all. Let's just say that. Let's not say that. I don't want to say that coach isn't getting to him. But I think you watched Coughlin yesterday. I mean, if you watched him on the sideline, I mean, God knows he probably had other things on his mind. But he was dumbfounded. So you really got to come back to, is it execution? Or is it preparation? Well, if it's execution, then it's on the players. If it's preparation, then it's on the coaches. But I think it's, you know, unfortunately, I think it's a little bit of both. But what bothers me is, and I know a lot of people come on the show and they talk about let's get in the hurry-up offense, whatever, and that doesn't always, you know, make the difference. But yesterday, when things were going bad, I didn't see anything at all, and I know things got bad really quick, but there was a chance for them to get into 4-minute offense to change the pace of the game. There was a chance them to go to max protect. There was a chance for them to throw an occasional shorter pass. I guess when I watch other teams like the Patriots, I live in Connecticut, so I get Tom Brady to death. But I watched him for years throw to Welker, you know, 3-yard slants that went for 50 yards and stuff. It just didn't seem like Gilbride, for lack of a, he calls the plays, really had an idea of how to change it up. And I think it really hurt us. So I think we need to finish out the year, and I'm not giving up the year, but, you know, it's whatever, and say that I thought that the Browns were nuts for releasing Trent Richardson. I really did at first. But it appears they decided to kind of stop the bleeding, stop being wed to old ways, and start to move on.
And honestly, Vic, from that perspective, I wonder how long before they trade Josh Gordon if he continues to play the well he's playing as well.
They're reportedly shopping him right now.
Yeah.
And I think you're probably right. And the way I look at it is you can't be wed to old ways. I mean, I'm not saying let's have wholesale changes and bring in, you know, guys off the practice squad. That's not going to change things. What I'm saying is I think both sides, the players and the coaches, need to go into separate rooms and look at each other. And then they need to come into a common room and they need to say, okay, guys, what's the deal? Who's got a suggestion? No suggestion is too foolish. We've got a lot of guys on this roster that have some high salaries and Boss and Tuck is up for a contract. And the last thing I'll just say is that, you know, Justin Tuck really disappoints me. You know, he wears that C in his chest, and he seems to be a great guy, and does a lot of good for the community. But he hasn't been the same since Michael Strahan has left, and he's just really not providing any value right now. So give you some young guys chances. So I'll give the rest of the callers a chance to go on and on like I did. So thanks for taking my call.
Vic, I appreciate it. And in fairness to Justin Tuckett, if you want to, you know, take issue with his demeanor on the sideline and stuff, that's fine. He's, frankly, in the first two games, was probably the Giants' best defensive end on the roster. How often do you see a defensive end leading your team in tackles? And that's what Justin Tuck did through the first 2 weeks of the season.
And he looked very good in the preseason as well, considering he had been battling injuries the last couple of years. But, John,
this is not a Justin Tuck issue.
No. What bothers me is, and I understand fans are trying to find reasons as to why the team has performed so poorly in the first three games, but I just don't buy the momentum argument. You know, these are professional athletes. They're playing at the highest level of this game. I don't think you need a head coach at this point to give you reason to go out there and play at a high level and keep your reputation up there. You shouldn't need that. If you need that, then you don't deserve to be in the NFL. That's my personal opinion.
I agree with you. And we saw the Giants offensive line get beat one-on-one, man or man.
That's execution.
You need a coach. Exactly. And that's what Vic said. Is it game planning, preparation, or is it execution? It's execution.
Yeah.
And if you're a player, you need a coach to tell you not to be emasculated and embarrassed on national TV by your opponent dominating you in the trenches. I will quote head coach Tom Coughlin. They were manhandled. Manhandled. Again and again and again. I don't care what you coach during the week. It's not going to change. Guys got to step up and do their jobs.
And the reason why a lot of the players on this team don't need motivation, John, a lot of these players are on one-year deals. The Giants need a reason to bring you back. If you don't, then you need to be auditioning for other teams. That should be motivation enough to perform at a high level.
201-939-4513. Obviously, the two guys that does not apply to is Pugh, who was on his rookie contract, first-round pick, and Will Beatty, who just got the extension.
Correct.
And those are two of the guys that did have some of the struggles in that game. But your point stands. Overall, this team has a ton of guys on one-year contracts that, frankly, are going to be free agents. And by the way, folks, just for the record, the Giants are going to have a lot of flexibility in free agency this offseason because of all those guys in the one-year contracts. They'll make a decision on Akeem Nicks. They'll make a decision on Jason Pierre-Paul, who, by the way, is not going to get a long-term big-money extension. Because he has been silent for three games. Unless his play improves, he's not getting a big money extension this offseason. Not happening. The Giants will give him one that is commensurate with his production this year, but he's not getting a top-end defensive end extension this year if he keeps playing the way he's playing.
That's why the Giants didn't jump the gun after they locked up Victor Cruz and all of a sudden lock up Akeem Nicks, considering there were question marks regarding whether or not he could stay healthy. And speaking of free agency, John, remember the last time the Giants shored up their offensive line, they went that route. Brought in Sean O'Hara from the Browns, brought in Kareem McKenzie.
Long time ago.
But maybe that's the direction they need to go back at instead of talking about let's pile up draft picks and hope these guys pan out.
And that hasn't worked. Mitch Petras, no longer on the roster.
Matt McCants,
no longer on the roster. James Brewer, fourth-round pick now, can't break the starting lineup. Brandon Mosley, fourth-round pick now, wasn't able to break the starting lineup. And we talked about this last week, and I know some of the guys online took issue with it, making the point that you have to spend higher draft picks on offensive linemen. Well, eventually, you're going to have these middle-round draft picks come through. Every one of your offensive linemen can't be a first or second round pick. You got to have a fourth rounder at guard or center come through and give you some meaningful snaps. And the Giants haven't been able to do that. 201-939-4513. Steve's in Staten Island. Steve, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Lance. Good morning, John. How are you guys?
Doing well, Steve.
Doing all right, Steve. What's up, pal?
Well, okay, hold on now because I'm going to take some space up on this ledge, all right?
All right.
Well, listen, give me a minute here.
Sure.
Give me things that I think, you know, what maybe can be done. I got to agree with you first off when you said about motivation. You know what? Yeah, you're right. If you're not motivated in the professional, in the National Football League, then really you shouldn't even be playing. And I don't care who you are. You know what I'd like to see out of this offense? And, you know, I'm going to say this, and believe me, you know, I'm going to tell you right now, Giant fans need to calm down because when you listen to all the sports talk stations already, here they are chiming in about, you know, making big changes. You know what? As far as I'm concerned, I hope Coughlin's around long enough to beat Steve Owens' record. That's how I feel. That's where I'm going to say it and leave it at that. You know, no huddle. You've seen Eli do it. You saw it in week one against Dallas. It's effective. He looks good with this no huddle. He gets to the ball out fast. The receivers, for some reason, are right there. It looks good. You're right with the screens and the little dump-offs. And going back to what one of the other callers from Canada said about Brady and Welker, you know what? He doesn't need a Welker. He's got David Wilson for that, okay?
And he has Victor Cruz.
And you saw flashes of it yesterday in the third and fourth where he had some pretty decent runs. Do I think that Carolina at that point figured the game was over? Could be. We can go on and on with this. But I think this team really needs to look like they need to get to the huddle faster. I'm looking at the Panthers yesterday, and they're just executing one play after another. And I'm looking at the Giants, and I'm saying, okay, here we go. Let's take that slow walk to the huddle. You know, no huddle works. And I think, and see, this is where, to me, I think Gilbride sometimes might have to take a hit. Listen, if, you know, again, you guys see the same game I see. This offense isn't fooling anybody. Let's be honest. Let's call it what it is. As a fan, if I'm sitting my fat butt on a couch watching the game, and you could pretty much tell what they're going to run, you know the defenses on the other teams are saying the same thing.
Now, Steve, in fairness, I'm usually one that argues with people against the no huddle. Yesterday, I believe it was after the 10-0 score, Howard Cross did a report from the sideline. He made the point that I think the Giants, just to mix things up on offense and to relax that Panthers pass rush a little bit, should go no huddle. And quite frankly, I thought it was a good idea because a lot of times when you're coming out of the huddle quicker, you make that defense a little bit tired, it does slow down the pass rush. I would have liked to see that at some point in the second quarter just to see if that change of pace could have changed how the offensive line performed and maybe slow down that Panther pass rush. I happen to agree with you on that one. I think that's a fair point.
Listen, I'll tell you point blank, okay? Like I said, their offense is not fooling anyone. And it's sad when you look at this team and they've got the weapons. They've got the weapons. You can ask any – listen, I got some of my best friends that diehard Jet fans, and they still wish that they were lucky that they could have kept Cruz. I mean, let's be honest. You know, we have the weapons. And that's what's killing me is that, okay, right now their offensive line is just – I mean, come on, to make that Panther defense look like the 85 Bears, that's inexcusable. You know what? That's just – there's no reason for that. You know, that offense just got abused on all facets yesterday of the game. And I'm going to tell you something. On defense, you know what? I don't even know where to begin what the problem is on defense because we talked about it. I called you guys last week on it. You're going to burn this front four out, okay? And you're already in week three. And, you know, things have to change defensively too. I'm sorry. And I don't want to say that this team's going to go 0-4 because – I'm a fan, right?
Of course.
As a fan, you think your team's going to win them all. That's just the way it goes. But come on, guys. This is Andy Reid we're talking about, okay? He knows this Giant team in and out. You alluded to it earlier, okay? That Kansas City front four leaps and bounds is a better front four than a Panther front four. You know the pressure they're going to put on Eli next week. You have any idea? And you know what? Again, as a fan, I'm going to say this team's going to snap it, they're going to win, and it's going to work on all fronts. I just think that, A, the offense is predictable. Kevin Gilbride isn't fooling anybody. I think, B, they have to go more no huddle because, like you said, it slows up that line. These guys get gassed. You see it. The hands are on their side. They look like they're dying. And, C, as far as defense is concerned, you know what? You guys talked about it, but I don't see any help. And, again, the linebackers just look totally out of place. And you know what?
Let's all right,
just
Steve.
Hope it changes. You know?
All right, thanks for the call, pal.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. And I don't think we really want to get into the full preview of the Kansas City Chiefs. We're going to have the rest of the week to do that.
Yeah.
But Steve does bring up a good point. You look at the Kansas City defense, you look at the Carolina defense, and it is apples and oranges. And I'm not trying to take anything away from this Panthers front seven, John, but we're talking about Justin Houston, who had 4.5 sacks against the Eagles. He's a linebacker. You're talking about Tamba Hali, an excellent playmaker, and the secondary that is not decimated by injuries.
And don't forget first-round pick Dontari Poe with 2 sacks against the Cowboys a couple weeks ago, and he's a very talented nose tackle in the middle of that defensive line.
Eric
Brandon
Berry,
Flowers,
Brandon Flowers,
if he
yeah.
plays, we'll see. He's got a knee. But Eric Berry is one of the best ascending young safeties in the league.
And I would even go further than those two. I know a lot of people like to mention those two names. They also have Sean Smith, a veteran from the Dolphins, and Dante Robinson, who came over from the Falcons. These guys know how to play football, and they know how to be very aggressive at the line. It's a scary thought what the Giants are facing come this weekend. Plus, Andy Reid, as Steve touched on, who, you know, knows this division very well. I mentioned this at the beginning of the season. If I'm Andy Reid and I'm a new coach in the AFC West, if there's any division that I want to play out of conference, it's the division I just came from, because I know those teams like the back of my hand.
And it's shown so far. Beat the Dallas Cowboys, beat the Philadelphia Eagles.
2-for-2.
201-939-4513. A lot of people on hold, folks, so we're going to try to go through these quicker to get everybody in and out of here so they can say their piece and move on. So let's go to Steve in D.C. Steve, what's going on?
Hey, what's happening, guys? I'm going to keep it quick, and I'll listen off air, guys.
Okay.
First of all, I'm going to say each and every single player, including coaches, need to take their game checks and donate them to charity because they didn't earn a nip off it. That's number one. Number two, I agree with the callers. Like I've been saying, you know, I think that it's tempo. You know, we need to get some movement. A lot less, you know, check downs and everything else. We need to get movement. The no huddle definitely works. And we need to check the ball down. We need to be running more screens out of the backfield or what have you. I do think that there's a serious level of a lack of enthusiasm, not from the players, and that comes from obviously the play call. And the players know that they're predictable too. And, you know, there's an old saying from Microsoft Fires called enthusiasm is like a child's, but mixed with knowledge and wisdom, it can produce miracles. There's absolutely no enthusiasm. Like the caller was saying, everyone can see what we're about to run. You know, I don't care what your knowledge is of football, but way too predictable.
Well, but Steve, I don't mean to cut you off, and I know you have a lot to say, but talking about the point that it's too predictable, I know Steve and a couple of the callers voiced this. You have Eli Manning, who's a very experienced quarterback, who has flexibility in this offense to change plays at the line of scrimmage.
So whenever he wants.
Correct. So what I don't understand is if this offense is so predictable, you're going to tell me Eli Manning doesn't realize that and wouldn't make changes to try to spice things up? That's what I can't grasp right now with what all the callers are saying.
Well, you know, I mean, I think right now, I thought he was a little bit too gun-shy at points. I thought he was running when he didn't need to run.
Steve. He was not gun-shy. He was getting the crap beat out of him the whole game.
The offensive line sucks. I'm not saying that he didn't have reason to be a little bit nervous back there, but I thought a couple plays he kind of got a little bit premature and moving. I'm not going to put this all on Eli, guys. I'm not going to do that, you know. I mean, obviously, the offensive line is just in shambles. And now that starts with attitude. You know, I don't have any answers for the offensive line. I wish I did. You know, I'll just say this because I know there's a lot of the calls, you know, but Justin Tuck, honestly, the Judas stealing. I know you guys want to keep politically right, but I mean,
he's played well this year, Steve. He's played well this year.
Maybe in preseason. But I'm not seeing it on the field.
He led the team in tackles the first 2 weeks. A defensive lineman leading the team in tackles is unheard of.
Listen, you know. Okay, I'll give you that. I'll shut up and say this last thing. That somebody has to step up and have some attitude. At least Bradshaw would have got the smacking people in the back of the helmet. At least we knew the dude cared. It doesn't look like we care, and that bothers me. You know, so I'm listening off air, guys. You know, obviously I'm emotional, so.
Thank you, Steve. I'll leave it at that today, but
thanks for taking my call, guys.
All right, appreciate it.
Thanks for weighing in. Appreciate that.
And I don't want this to come back down to Kevin Gilbride being predictable, because it's not fair. It's not fair. He could have ran any play in the playbook at any particular time. It wouldn't have worked if your offensive line doesn't block.
The only thing that I agree with what most of the callers have said is if you want to criticize them for not dumping off to the running backs enough. Listen, we talked about this last season, John. Eli Manning was pressing. He would try to throw the home run. The simplest solution would have been just throw it over to David Wilson or Ahmad Bradshaw on the flat, and that's at least a positive yardage situation. And he didn't do that. So we're not seeing a lot of that this season. That's valid. I can't argue with that.
And we said that off the top of the show. They could have did a little more three-step drop, some more quicker slants, some stuff out of the backfield to the running back. If that's your complaint, and even if your complaint is not going no huddle in the second quarter, try to get the offense going and slow down the pass rush, all those are correct criticisms, and I'll buy all that. But this whole predictable thing is nonsense. Because you know why? When we get people calling up about Kevin Gilbride, One person says they don't pass enough. Another person says they need to run the football more. Everyone has different complaints. So clearly he's really not that predictable if people have different complaints about what he's trying to do. And this offense is consistently a top 5-7 offense in this league. If it's so predictable, how come they've had so much success? It doesn't hold any water.
Well, that's why I throw Eli Manning into the conversation. If you're saying that it's a predictable offense, then that means that some of this has to fall on Eli Manning, because you're claiming that he's not doing enough at the line of scrimmage or sending a message to Kevin Gilbride in the meeting rooms and saying, Coach, it's not working. We've got to change it up. He's a veteran quarterback. He's been there. He's done that. This is not a rookie. This is not Ryan Tannehill in year two who's still adjusting to the system.
Not to mention the fact this offense is so variable in terms of the passing game and adjusting routes based on coverage. You might have the same play called in the huddle, but three or four wide receivers might be doing different things based on if you're seeing man-to-man or a cover three or a cover two. They'll run different routes. They have sight adjust with the quarterback and the wide receivers on every single play. So by its very nature, it can't be predictable, because if a defense thinks the Giants are going to do something, it's built into the play for the wide receivers to adjust their routes to combat that defensive adjustment. It's part of his offense. That's what makes Kevin Gilbride's offense so effective and, by the way, so difficult to learn for people coming in, which is another complaint that people have, which, by the way, can be a fair one. It's not an offense where you can plug and play guys very easily because it is so complicated, but that's why it's so effective at the same time.
And that's why we haven't seen rookies come in through the door and all of a sudden make an immediate impact. And also, by the way, remember we received a lot of calls about where Lewis Murphy's been?
There he was.
He was there, and he coughed up the football.
201-939-4513. You really, I mean, Kiwanuka had a sack. Is that basically the one good thing you can say about somebody in that game?
And Aaron Ross had the interception. Unfortunately, they couldn't punch it in the end zone.
Well, and then he got toasted two or three times later in the game.
There were flashes.
Eli Manning did do a good job a couple times getting out of the way from getting hit hard on the pass rush. How about that? That's about it. 201-939-4513. Charles is down in North Carolina. Charles, what's going on?
Man, you know, you know I'm from Charlotte. I was born here.
Were you at the game?
And my wife. Yeah, I was there.
I'm sorry.
My wife's a Panther fan, man, and I haven't been able to hold it down, man, since we lost that game. Man, I mean, it was pretty bad. It's been pretty bad for me and my house, man. We have a split household.
Hey, Packers lost yesterday, too.
So, Charles, you're doing some extra chores around the house this week. I think that's fair to say.
Man, she been clowning me, man. It's been pretty bad, man. She on Facebook making jokes and this and that. Man, all my friends from this area, man, really giving it to me. Got to be honest, but pretty embarrassed, man, being at the game. But I'll say this, I'm not going to be one at this point to be, hey, we need to do this, somebody needs to step up. That's the obvious stuff. I think that I look at John Fox when he was his last year here in Carolina. I look at Andy Reid last year with the Eagles. Sometimes it's not about being a bad coach. It's not about being a motivator. Sometimes you just need change. And you know what? You did a good job while you were there. You had some success. But sometimes you just need new ideology when it comes to your approach. That's as simple as it gets. I love Tom Coughlin. He's a future Hall of Famer, I believe. But sometimes you just need a new philosophy, a new ideal, and a new energy. And it just comes down to that. We can point the finger and say, man, you know, the O-line's doing this or the D-line's doing that, which is true, or Eli's doing this or Gilbride's doing this. At the end of the day, the way this team looked yesterday, walking off the field at halftime, they were walking, heads down. It's only 10-0 or whatever it was, 13, whatever it was. I can't remember. We're walking off the field. I said, look at that, man. Those guys are walking with their head down, walking off the field, not jogging. Not ready to go in and get a strategy to come back out and win the game. The Panthers was full of life yesterday. Jogged off the field, they was peppy. I think that I'm not bashing that one coach or a player. I just think that sometimes you just have to say, you know what, it's time for a new energy and a new philosophy and a new ideology to come to the team to change things. And sometimes it just takes it. Like I say, Andy Reid, 3-0. 2-3, he'd be 3-0 the way they looked last year in Philly.
Hey, look, Charles, I hear you. I hear you, Charles, and I think this is how it's going to go. Coach Coughlin's not going to lose his job in the middle of a season. He's done too much here for that to happen. So you guys
can solve anything
push.
Either.
You guys, I don't think it'll solve anything either. So you can push that aside right now. Let's say worst.
No.
I hear you. Hold on a second. Let's say worst case scenario. This season absolutely crashes and burns. God forbid Eli Manning gets hurt, because he gets hit too much, and this team goes 5-11, 4-12. They have the fifth pick in the draft next year. Here's the conversation I think is going to happen in the offseason. They'll sit down with Tom and they'll say, look, Tom, we love you. We'd love to have you here for a long time. But what are your plans right now? How much longer do you think you want to coach? And if he says, look, I want to coach out my contract, which would just be one more season, maybe the Giants will then say, well, if you only want to stay one more year, we'll start the transition now and make the change now so Eli Manning has as many prime years as he can, used to whatever new system comes in. I could see a conversation like that happening at the end of the year. But I think the onus, and again, I think the Giants organization, as you know, and maybe to a fault sometimes, can be extremely loyal. They'll have a conversation with Coach Coughlin after the season, Charles, and say, look, how much longer do you want to coach? He'll give him an answer, the best answer he can, and then the Giants will move off of that.
Well, I'm not looking for the Giants to fire mid-season. No way.
Right.
I think you got too much respect and love for Tom Coughlin to do that. No. What I'm saying is, obviously, I don't see us winning this weekend. That's 0-4. I'm a Giants fan. I love the Giants. But I'm a realistic fan, too. I'm not a Cowboys fan. Or, you know, every week we're going to win. Even when, you know, I'm not that kind of guy. I'm realistic. But no, I think that at the end of the season, wherever we end up, unless we went out, which is probably not going to happen, or, you know, we end up with a winning season, I think you have to entertain the thought of not that Coughlin did a bad job or he's not motivating the guys in some type of way. I just think that sometimes, again, it's pooping from the plate.
I think it's fair, Charles.
I'm not making it up.
Thanks for the call, buddy.
Look at John Fox. I mean, the guys had a chance, and they're being successful. They are good coaches.
Thanks for the call, Charles.
Thanks for weighing in. And it's a fair point, but as John said, if there's any changes that are going to come, it would come after the season.
And Charles saying the same thing. He doesn't want to move Tom Coughlin in the middle of the year, because if they're crashing and burning, changing the coach mid-season is not going to help anything anyway.
And it's not just how it relates to the Giants. Look at the track record of the NFL, John. What's the last interim coach that all of a sudden turned things around and took his team to the playoffs?
You know, Jason Garrett actually did a pretty good job turning around that 1 year, but they were already out of it when he took over. And
look at
the
Jaguars.
He went like 5-2 the rest of the way or something like that.
I mean, it builds momentum into maybe the next season, but outside of that, it doesn't really change a whole lot.
Hey, look, you're going to have to move on from Coach Coughlin eventually, but it's going to be more on his terms than it is going to be on the team terms. Because, quite frankly, like we talked about, I don't think the problems this team are having are coach-related. And I understand Charles's point, and sometimes there's something to be said for change, for the sake of change, to mix things up. But keep in mind, if you do that, in some situations, you almost are taking a step back to take a couple steps forward. So if you do make a change, Eli's learning a new offense. You don't know how this new coach is going to relate to the players, what his staff is going to look like. A lot of things could change, and it's not always for the better.
Well, and then David Wilson, Reuben Randall, who are relatively young players, are also going to need to digest a new system where they have all of a sudden invested so much time into trying to get used to Kevin Gilbride's themes. And remember, David Wilson can't lose track of being a strong pass protector, regardless of what new offensive coordinator comes in.
And is Victor Cruz going to be the same player in another system, too? Who knows? 201-939-4513. Jeff's in Rhode Island. Jeff, what's going on, pal?
Morning, fellas. How you doing?
Morning, Jeff.
Could be better, Jeff. How about you?
Yeah, well, I could be a whole lot better. I wasn't able to actually watch the game.
Well, you didn't miss much.
Televised there, but no, I did listen to it over the computer. Listened to Carl Banks and Bob Papa, and suddenly it's like I was transported back to the mid '70s with the crap that they used to put on the field back in those days, and I just couldn't believe what I was hearing. I was like, you know, I mean, this team's got a lot of talent, but maybe we just don't have enough talent.
Yeah, Jeff, the problem yesterday was that the team was dominated physically. And it's almost like they had no chance of winning. And we've seen the Giants get blown out of games before, but you say, well, look, you know, if that ball doesn't get tipped, if Eli doesn't throw a pick there, if they convert in the red zone, they get a couple of touchdowns instead of field goals, you can rationalize how the team could have won a football game. Even in games last year where they got, you know, beaten badly by the Ravens or the Falcons, you could have rationalized ways they could have won those games. There was no rationalization yesterday. That team was dominated in every facet of the game.
From what I, you know, what I could hear, it was all downhill right from the get-go. You know, we get 13 games left. The Giants going to go 10-13. I mean, are they going to win 10 out of 13? Are they going to win 9? I don't know. I'm not thinking so.
It doesn't look like it the way they're playing, Jeff.
Well, in order for them to pull that out, Jeff, you're likely going to have to go unbeaten in the division if you really want to make some noise, and I just don't see the likelihood of that happening. You can't go 3-3 like they did in seasons past.
I mean, the way things are right now, they'll be lucky to play 500 ball, and that's the way I feel about it. So, I mean, I hate to be pessimistic like that, but it's just, you know, just the way I'm feeling.
No, it's not pessimistic. It's more realistic at this point, Jeff. Yeah. I mean, based on the results that we've seen over the first three games.
Yeah. Thanks, Jeff.
Okay.
All right, appreciate the call, Jeff.
Sorry, Jeff, didn't mean to cut you off there. We're trying to get as many guys in as possible. Literally, you hang up on one person, somebody else clogs the lines. A lot of people are trying again. We're trying to get to everybody as quickly as possible. Let's go to Saul in Delaware. Saul, what's going on?
Hey, guys. Great show.
Thanks.
Just very, very disappointing. You know, like what I've seen in the first Dallas game, you know, the way that they tried to come back from that game was pretty good. So you had some hope in that first game, but then just these last two games against Denver and then yesterday against the Panthers, they just like they're not physical enough. Like this team just doesn't look physical enough to compete right now with the tough schedule that, you know, the Giants usually get. There's like the no-name linebacker core, and then just this defensive line, which is just not consistent, hasn't been consistent, not even last season. And I think, you know, like it might be like time for Tuck to just to go, and they're going to have to make a decision on JPP. But I think he's great, though. I think he could be good, like, if he just gets some help and stuff. But as far as the offensive line, they just look bad. I just think they just need they've tried to draft guys and get, you know, fresh faces in there, but at the same time, you know, if you got a guy that you can get in the first round, like they did with Pugh, that's really good, then I think you should get him if you can get him. You know, but the Giants also don't, you know, like you guys have said it before, they don't like to draft needs. They like to draft who's the best on the board. I just think, you know, there's an ideology where, you know, you could kind of change the way of thinking, because the way it is right now, I know that Tom Coughlin, the way he's had it a couple of seasons ago, he's been winning. He's been doing good, and you can't say, listen, Tom, your system isn't working. It is working. He's got two Super Bowls. But I agree with some of the callers saying that, you know, it might just be a time to scenario. Obviously, you let Tom leave on his terms honorably, but it just might be that time for, you know, have somebody else take the reins over the Giants.
Well, Tom Coughlin, listen, at the end of the day, and Saul, appreciate the phone call, is not going to necessarily say to himself at the end of the season, assuming it continues to go in a downward spiral, this is the way I want to go out. Tom Coughlin's going to be motivated to at least go out on a high note. So that's why I don't see him going to the organization and saying, guys, I think it's time to head in a different direction. I see it playing out more in the way that John had outlined it earlier in the show, where there's a conversation where the organization says, Tom, we don't want to get rid of you, but we've got to now think about the future after you're no longer running the show. And it's probably wise to maybe change coordinators or go in a direction where it's easy for the transition from the players to adjust to a new coaching staff.
At some point, you want to make that transition early enough so that Eli Manning is still in his prime years when he masters whatever new system eventually comes in. Now, here's the question, though. What happens if Tom says, guys, look, I'll sign a 3-year extension right now, and I'll promise you I'll coach you 3 more years? That's when I think the interesting decision has to come. I think, honestly, even if they do very poorly this year, I don't foresee the Giants outright firing head coach Tom Coughlin after the year. I don't see it happening. I really don't. I think they believe he's a great leader, a good football coach, a very good leader of men. And unless there are circumstances that I can't foresee that happens between now and the end of the year, I don't see it. I just don't see it happening. And frankly, I understand it. The guy won a Super Bowl 2 years ago. He's been a consistent winning coach here. The Giants haven't had one sub-500 year since he took over, except for that first rookie year with Eli Manning. So
they never even got off to an 0-3 start under Tom Coughlin. This is a first.
Exactly. So I don't think you can just jump off ship right now based off an 0-3 start. Let's see how the season goes. I just don't see them making that type of a drastic move this early. I really don't.
These are all hypothetical situations, but I'll throw out one more, John. Perhaps if they felt that there's a coach out there and the Giants have the trend of grabbing a former Giant player or a former Giant assistant and trying to bring them back.
Like a John Fox, for example.
If somebody would be willing, now I don't know, it depends on the position that this current coach is in, being groomed a little bit more under Coughlin so they have the next coach in waiting already on staff implementing his philosophies.
They've been asked about this before, and I don't remember if it was Jerry Reese or Giants owner John Mara, co-owner John Mara, that said it, how whether or not they believe in having a coach in waiting. I'm pretty sure they remember to say they don't believe in that philosophy necessarily, so that is something that I'm sure they will look at. 201-939-4513. Now we're looking way in the future, folks.
Correct.
This is obviously all hypothetical stuff, and honestly, right now, if you have to make me handicap it, I'd say there's a 90% head coach Tom Coughlin is back next year for the Giants, unless, again, something strange happens between now and then. And that's where I'm trying to account for that 10%. Let's go to Shakes in Baltimore. Shakes, what's going on?
Uh-oh. Shakes, how you doing?
Shakes, I had people tweeting me last night anticipating what your mood would be this morning and how you would react.
Shakes, you're becoming more popular than the two hosts on this show.
That is
true. I just want you to know that.
Oh, man. Well, I'm angry. I'm angry. I'm so disappointed. Sickening. Sickening. That's the word. That's the word for what I was watching yesterday. I'm about to say last night, because all day it was a dark cloud in my land, in Giant Land. It's just terrible. Let me speak on this Coughlin thing. I agree it's not the coaching and his scheme and all that, but I think it is that we need a fresh start. And I'm thinking it's Bill Cowher. I'm thinking it's Cowher. I think we need Cowher in here. And also, from last season when I started calling in the show, I was screaming about Ogletree. I was screaming about an impact linebacker. And they all these linemen, and they're good, and they're doing their job, but we still have the same problem we had last season. Same problem. Why? Because we just keep on poo-pooping on getting impact linebackers. Can we stop it now? Can we see that it's not working? It's not working. It's been three seasons, and the same darn thing keeps on happening. And Perryfield is conservative, conservative, conservative. I seen one blitz package last night. One blitz package where they threw a safety, and it didn't even work. I mean, come on, man. Terrible.
Well, Shakes, not to – Shakes.
Stop all this three safety stuff. I don't want it no more.
Shakes,
I don't want it no more. Not
to cut you off, and I understand the point about the linebackers, but I did see some blitzing yesterday, and what happened more often than not, when they would bring the pressure, Cam would find an opening right up the gut, and he would run wild on the Giants. So it's a really a catch-22 in those situations.
And I believe the Giants also blitzed on the play. Terrell Thomas got beat by Brandon LaFell in that corner, right? I believe they sent six or seven guys on that play.
And this is my thing about that, too, is you just said the middle. And that's my thing. We don't have a quarterback or the defense. I mean, nobody is setting adjustments, nothing. Nobody sees anything and says, oh, okay, let's put this play out there because that's better. Nobody's there. Nobody is smart enough to just say, okay, I see something, like Antonio Pierce did. I watched film countlessly, and he knew exactly what was coming, when it was coming. And we don't have that on this team. That got to change. I'm telling you, fellas, a lot of things got to go. A lot of things got to go. I want the defensive coordinator gone. I want the offensive coordinator gone. Coughlin, thank you, but we need Cowher in. And really, y'all going to get on me about this, but maybe we need a change in GM, too, because he's not bringing the talent that we need. We need smash mouth. Let's get back to smash mouth football. That's Giants football. This conservative and soft play that we're doing now, this is not our game, and that's not what I am used to watching. And it's making me sick to have to sit here and watch something like this. We pay our hard-earned money and everything and put in our heart, everything, our heart, me especially, put our heart into this team, and for them to show us this, it's disappointing. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Chase. That was the most passion I've heard from any fan calling up so far today. Steven Staten Island was close, but I understand where Shakes is coming from. You got a zero yesterday from this team on the scoreboard, and in terms of execution and pretty much everything they put out there, it was a zero. It was bad, and I get why he's upset. He has every right to be, and I understand he wants to tear down the house, but sometimes when you tear down the house, you lose some pretty valuable pieces that can help you rebuild it and fix it. And I'm not sure I'm to the point yet. And I'll use the word yet, because maybe in 8 weeks we'll have a different conversation. I'm not to the point yet where I'm going to say I'm going to junk my car and buy a brand new one, rather than maybe getting a new fender, maybe replacing the tires, get the transmission fixed, get a little tune-up. I think the car they're driving can be salvaged, honestly. I don't think it's beyond repair. They have enough weapons and talent on this team where they can still make something out of this group. I don't think you need to completely blow it up yet. We'll see again how if they get better in the next 4 or 5 weeks. But certainly, there needs to be some serious body work done on this car. There needs to be some serious engine work done on the car. Because, like we mentioned, the foundation of a football team is the offensive line. And right now, that foundation is not holding it up. It's not holding up the house that is the New York Giants. And it's falling apart, and it's affecting every aspect of their game.
Well, if you're going to salvage it, I think it falls on the players. And the one thing that I've noticed, John, when we were talking about watching this team during training camp in the preseason, you know, there was that culture of competition because everybody was fighting to make that 53-man roster. Even in that linebacker core that Shakes just referred to, you know, you had six players, and you thought that all of a sudden the cream would rise to the top, the best talent would be brought to the forefront. Now with the injuries to Dan Connor, you know, you're not seeing that competition anymore. It's almost as if a lot of these players are content that they've solidified their starting jobs, and because of injuries, the depth chart has been decimated. They need to bring that fire back. You need the bench players to do some of the heavy lifting, perhaps in practice, to make these starters rethink that they have it that good. That's what I think is the missing element right now. Do the coaches need to also be a part of that? Absolutely. But I think that you need to foster competition somehow during practice every day. That's not present right now, and I think that's a missing ingredient.
We have a lot of tweets here. I want to get to a couple of them. I can't even go back and scroll through all the ones we've gotten throughout the show because there are literally hundreds of them, it seems like. Let's go. Lauren Jackson shakes his back, and he's angry. Maybe he should have been in the locker room at halftime. Couldn't hurt, I
suppose.
They
ask for Shakes, and Shakes delivers.
And Mike Farmer's been on this kind of all morning, so I feel like we should at least address it because he's been talking about this since yesterday's
Farmer's
game.
Farmer's been
of our
talking
best
about
tweeters.
Everything, by the way, since yesterday. We've been getting
he's
hundreds
angry.
Of tweets from
he's
Farmer.
He's upset. It's okay.
My goodness. Him and his brother. Boy.
And this is in response to Shakes' point. Bill Cowher couldn't save this team, and I love Cowher. It's not coaching. It's bad evaluation of talent. And he's been kind of on this whole, you know, this is Jerry Reese's fault kick the last couple of days. And I feel like we should address that to a certain extent. Now, we've mentioned this before if you listen to the show. So if you want to go back and say this offensive line has its issues because the guys they've drafted to either be depth or be replacements on this offensive line in the middle rounds of the draft haven't worked out, I think it's a fair criticism. Whether you're talking about Mitch Petras, whether you're talking about Matt McCants, whether you're talking about James Brewer, whether you're talking about Brandon Mosley, I'd have to go through the other draft Jerry Reese has had about the offensive linemen they've drafted later in the draft and see if there's anybody else on that list. I'm sure there is. And they haven't found those middle-round replacements on the offensive line that any NFL team needs to stay young, stay good, and stay competitive. And if that's the criticism, I think it's a fair one. Now, I think he's done extremely well elsewhere. I still think, despite the fact he hasn't shown the production, I think David Wilson will prove to be a good pick. Akeem Nix was a good pick. Jason Pierre-Paul was an excellent pick. Will Beatty in the second round, the starting left tackle in this league in the second round, even if he's not a star, still a good pick. Linval Joseph, a good pick. Now, they've been misses on defense, sure. You've had the Jonathan Goffs, you've had the Philip Dillards, you've had the Clint Sintems. And are those misses? Sure, they're misses. And you go back in some drafts, you've had a lot of them. But I don't think it's to the point where you say he's swinging and missing on every pick here and you have to make a change. But are there some weaknesses on this team that come back to the fact that they haven't drafted well enough at certain positions? And I think really the two ones you talk about are probably linebacker and offensive line. I think it's probably a fair criticism.
I'm bringing up the history of the Giants' draft picks the last couple of seasons, and you know, you look at some of the late rounders, and they've been a disappointment. I mean, the fact that they just haven't gotten production out of this group. You look at teams that have won, you know, you could probably point to a handful of fifth or sixth round picks, John, that have eventually panned out and made an impact. And when you look at the offensive line, you know, the guys that you listed, you would have assumed by now they would have been those impact type of players. Unfortunately, they're not, and this is what happens. When your regulars get up there in age, they get worn down, and you don't have enough depth to turn to help fill those voids and fill those holes. So then you're left with the only choice of starting over again in the draft or going the route of free agency. And I'm heading in that direction once again. I think they need to revisit the game plan and the approach they had a couple of years ago.
Well, they try with David Boss.
But that was really the only guy that they turned to. Outside of that, they hoped that the Brewers and the Mosleys and the McCanns of the world would all of a sudden by now be able to fill in. And Will Beattie, who clearly was a higher draft pick and they just invested a lot of money, but you know, he's having his fair share of struggles. And that doesn't mean that Will Beattie's not going to be able to regroup, because for the most part, he's been decent. Yesterday, though, was a huge red flag. Across the board,
a big step back.
Yes,
it was a big
step
back. No question about it. And you figure he's going to bounce back. We haven't seen that type of performance from him, really, since his very early days as a member of the Giants. I mean, he had a flat-out bad game. And he said it in the postgame show after the game on the radio postgame show to Bob Papa. It was a terrible performance. I had to look myself in the mirror. Everyone does. We need to get better. Want to go to one other thing that Mike had brought up early, and Marcus Erickson reminded me of it with his most recent tweet. We should take some criticism, I'll use that word, for letting a top three pass-blocking running back in Bradshaw go on not getting and keeping a good blocking tight end. Look, right now it looks like they probably should have brought Bradshaw back, and he would have been a good low-cost option to be the third running back on this team with Andre Brown and David Wilson. But is Bradshaw going to be on the field in 2 or 3 weeks with those foot injuries he has all the time? I don't know.
There's a reason the Colts traded for Trent Richardson.
That's a great point.
They knew that Ahmad Bradshaw was not going to be able to last 16 games. It's a fair point, though. I don't disagree.
It's a fair point.
Hindsight's 20/20. Right now, they need an Ahmad Bradshaw. With respect to Martellus Bennett, which I think is the other point that they were alluding to in terms of a blocking tight end, that Martellus Bennett was very strong in that category, you have to consider the amount of money the Bears threw at him. In a perfect world, John, the Giants would have loved to re-sign him.
But not at that price.
But remember, the Bears threw a lot of money at him, and number two, they didn't have a lot of cap space.
They didn't.
Let's go back to this offseason, Giants fans. They did not have a lot of flexibility. That's why they gave out a lot of one-year deals. If you're now looking forward to the next offseason, you're hoping and you're assuming that there's going to be more money to be thrown around to get positions of need and keep players around as well.
And next year, David Boss has a big contract number. Chris Snee has a big contract number, and Kevin Booth is a free agent. So you could theoretically next year have three brand new interior offensive linemen. That is possible. Whether they come in the draft, in free agency, or one of these young guys like Mosley or Brewer step up and take one of those jobs, I don't know. We'll have to wait and find out and see. But I think there's a good chance all three interior offensive linemen next year could be different for the Giants.
And just to put things in perspective, I looked up the deal. Martellus Bennett, 4 years, $20 million. That's how much money he got from the Chicago Bears, just so that Giants fans understand why the mathematics did not add up for them to bring him back.
Saraceno makes a good point. Seriously, Beattie said the same thing after the game last week, and nothing changed, and that's fair. Words are words in the locker room, and it's nice to hear them. You have to see it reflected on the field the next week. I completely agree with that. And NYG Cap Central makes the point they've completely missed on 2 second rounders out of the last 5 seasons. Clint Stinson and Marvin Austin, don't disagree. I think we've mentioned that before. That's a bad job. You can throw in missed third-round picks on Beckham, Barden, and Jernigan.
Good point.
In that mix, too. It's only fair. You have to nail your first three picks each year to remain competitive. The salary cap era with a franchise quarterback in his prime years, and he's right. They haven't been able to do a great job refilling that talent in the middle rounds of the draft. The middle rounds of the draft are where you build your depth and you groom your replacement players for your aging guys. And remember, this offensive line was the best in football in 2008. Whether you had Richie Seibert with the injuries, retired. Sean O'Hara got a little bit older, got injured, had to retire. David Deal was in his latter years. Chris Knee has had hip surgery, hasn't been the same player since. And you haven't had that next wave of guys to carry the mantle. And I think that's a fair criticism.
You need that next wave. So this way that it's a smooth transition in the event you have injuries. And what happened this season, John, a lot of injuries hit this team at once, and you're looking at your depth chart, and your depth chart is just not coming through.
Sorry for making you wait, callers. Wanted to show some love to my guys on Twitter. We'll get back to some of the tweets later on. We'll try to go for 20 more minutes till 11 o'clock. Let's go to Mike down in Dallas. He's been holding. Mike, thanks for holding. Sorry it took so long. What's going on?
No problem. I just want to make a couple points here.
Yeah.
One, you know, we always talk about, you know, we should have got a linebacker in the draft. We should have got a linebacker in the draft. You know, and that'd be nice. But, you know, if we get a linebacker in the draft, we have to develop him. And that takes a lot of time. You know, that first-round pick from Georgia, I hadn't heard his name this year. You know, we should have just kept what we had in Chase Blackburn. You know, he's not the greatest, but you know what, though? He's smart. He knows how to read defenses. He's a smart guy. That was a big loss. We pick up guys like Connors and whoever else, and it just takes time to develop these guys. You know, they're not going to be overnight successes. Our offensive line seems like they got old overnight. You know, Snee and all these guys are just old, and they hit the wall. And, you know, that's bad planning on the Giants. We should have seen that coming. So I just want to, you know, just relax on Coach Coughlin. He's going to be fine. The Giants have good management, okay? And if they're not, then they'll take care of it. So that's all I really want to say is just, you know, let's just relax and calm down and figure out what's going on.
Well, Mike, I agree with you, and I understand your point that you need to give these offensive linemen time to develop. And that's fair with Justin Pugh. He just walked in the door. But I think the perfect example is a James Brewer. Don't you think that James Brewer has had enough time to learn the system and make some impact?
He's got to be ready to play.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. James Brewer at this point is a bust. You know, but like I said, we need to either bring in linemen or, you know, draft them. We don't have time to draft a lineman and develop them. You know, that it takes too much time.
Well, yes, at this point, yeah, Mike, you're right. At this point, you've gotten to the point in time now where you can't afford to let somebody learn on the job when you have Eli Manning back there. They could have been doing that the last 2 years when you had competent starters in front of them. But right now, you're right. You need the guys to come in and play right away next year. There's no question.
You know, and like I said, as far as linebackers go, that takes too much time to develop. If we're going to develop somebody, we should have kept Blackburn and let him develop under Blackburn. He's not the most gifted guy, but he's a smart guy. I'd rather have a smart guy over a gifted guy any day of the week. You know, you see guys all the time that come in the league like Dez Bryant who are extremely gifted and just can't learn the playbook. You know, I'd rather have a guy like Victor Cruz or someone like that who's talented and smart. And that's where I think we've succeeded most of the time. And right now, we're not succeeding with that.
All right, Mike. Appreciate the call, bud.
Thanks.
Have a good one. And I'm not sure if you can say they're not succeeding because they're not smart enough. I'm not sure if that's the way you look at it. I mean, look, the reasons guys don't succeed in the NFL vary from not being good enough physically to not being able to figure out NFL playbook. That certainly applies to some guys. Other guys, frankly, once they get those big paychecks, lose some motivation. That happens too. So it really varies from guy to guy. 201-939-4513. Let's stick on the phones and go to Len in Columbia, Maryland. Len, what's going on?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey, Len.
You know, I would swear that Chase was sitting next to me in a sports bar down here yesterday. The guy who was there sounded just like Chase, and with all due respect, I nodded my head because I understand where he was coming from and what he was saying. And I tell you, there's a lot of similar thinking Giant fans out there. Look, I'm not ready to start talking about the offseason.
It's too early for that.
Understand who we are. We're 0-3. Understand how we got there. Understand we got a game next week, and it's a big game. And, look, nobody in this league, no team in this league is 38 points better than another. I've never seen a point spread at 38 points.
Well, have you seen the Jacksonville Jaguars, Len? I mean, you know, let's put things in perspective here.
Well, they were 19.5 point underdogs yesterday.
And the Seahawks came through
and
then so.
But not 38.
Correct.
Right?
The point is that the Giants played well below their talent level, and that is correct.
Look, we stunk the place out. That team, in my opinion, was not ready yesterday. Whose fault is that? I don't know. You lay the blame anywhere you want. I know guys are going to tweet today and say, Len makes it too simple. Len waters it all down. This team wasn't ready to play yesterday, guys. They weren't ready to play. From the first play, this team was not ready. Now, look, if I'm this coach, and I tend to think it's not the coaches. I'm not saying I don't want to make a decision at the end of the season regarding Tom and so forth. I'm not ready to go there yet. Just not ready to go there yet. All right? This is on the players. 38-0. And, you know, okay, offensive line, core of the game, controls the game. It's all about the offense. 36 in the first game, 41 in the second game, 38 yesterday. Look, I wouldn't be too nice to these guys this week. This is on the players. You know the old adage, talk is cheap, takes money to buy whiskey. Yeah, say all you want, guys. I wouldn't be too nice to these guys in these meeting rooms. I'd close that door, and if I was one of those coaches, I'd go one-on-one with these players and just tell them, you guys stunk the place out yesterday, and it was outright embarrassing. Here's what we got to find out next Sunday. Who wants to put the blue jersey on? It'll probably be a white jersey because we're on the road, but understand where I'm coming from, okay? Who wants to pull that jersey on and go out there and fight? Those are the guys I want in my foxhole. The rest of you, get the hell out of the locker room. That was disgraceful yesterday, guys. Disgraceful. And I would tell them that to their face. Close the door. You know, tell you, you say anything you want to the press players. Anything you want. But you guys stunk the place out yesterday. I mean, that was, yeah, surprising, frustrating, disappointing. I lay it on the players. Nobody's 38 points better than anybody else in that league.
You could have put the best coaching staff of all time together for that game yesterday to make in-game adjustments. It wouldn't have mattered the way the players played. It wouldn't have mattered. You're 100% right.
Listen, that's where I'm going, all right? This group of 53 wasn't ready to step on a football field yesterday. And somebody needs to tell them that. This is a business. You're drawing a paycheck. You know, we're still paying you guys out here. This isn't trial. That looked like JV versus the varsity yesterday.
That's a fact. You know, Len, I think that's a fair way to put it.
Two teams on opposite ends of the spectrum.
We appreciate the call, Mike.
Just
real quick.
60 minutes, guys, players. I'm talking to the players now, not you guys. 60 minutes of pure garbage. And listen, raise your hand if you want to put the blue jersey on. Raise your hand if you're going to fight. Tom alluded to it just a little bit yesterday. Not even a full sentence. Half a sentence. I want to find out who wants to fight with me. And I think he suggested he was going to find out. Good for him. Go find out. This is not coaching. We'll deal with that at the end of the season.
All
you
right.
Guys pull that blue jersey on and represent this team and fight. That was garbage yesterday.
All right, Len, thanks for the phone call. Greatly appreciate you weighing in. We want to get to a few more callers before we close out the show here.
And I feel like we've been sidetracked a little bit. We've talked about Coach Coughlin's future, Jerry Reese's job, drafting, the offensive and defensive coordinators. But let's bring back to the point that we started the show with here, folks. Players didn't show up to play this game yesterday. Let's be honest. The offensive line got dominated again and again. You didn't get pressure on Cam Newton. The special teams didn't play well, neither the punter or the kicker, missing a field goal, and the punts, again, weren't great yesterday. The secondary got beat for big plays down the field. The only guy that I thought showed great fire and effort was David Wilson, to be quite honest with you, still running hard in the second half. Eli got the you-know-what kicked out of him through no fault of his own. The players got dominated. They didn't play well. They didn't play with energy and enthusiasm. They hung their heads in the second half after they went down 17-0. You saw no fire from them in the second half or good play. this game was on the players yesterday. You can talk about all these, you know, causes and tertiary issues all you want. The guys in the field, as Len put it, and I'm happy he brought us back home to this topic, were a lot better than 38-0. The players have more talent than 38-0, but they played to 38-0, and that's on the players.
All three facets of this football team failed on all levels. I mean, there's no excuses for that. It's inexcusable, the fact that they're not able to score anything on a Panthers defense that let the Buffalo Bills score 24 points on them. Let's not forget about that. This is a week removed from a Buffalo team that just got beat by the Jets and showed its fair share of struggles, was able to go up and down the field on this Carolina Panthers defense. And the Giants, I think on paper, a lot of people would agree, have a lot more talent than Buffalo has to offer.
At Giants Gab has been on a fire on the Giants chat Twitter feed. Not pleased, understandably so. By bringing in Brandon Myers, we've become the Raiders. Unbelievable. I thought that was a good line, so I decided to read it. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Naeem in East Orange. What's going on, Naeem?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How's everybody doing today?
We're doing all right, Naeem. How about yourself?
Oh, man, I'm good, man. After watching that game, man, I was just a little sick, man. But I believe in the old way. I believe in the old way, man. I've been hearing a lot of flack about the Coughlin and the Kevin Gilbride, you know. I might not agree with a lot of the callings of Kevin Gilbride, man, but I live by the old school. And I'm just looking at a lot of the teams around the NFL, and I don't see, like, those dominant players of which I grew up to be, you know, to watch. And even those backup players who actually was groomed or even had somebody to look up to, whether it was in a locker room, whether it was whether it was on the field, looking at a great play and just mimicking what they seen. I think a lot of these kids today, whether it be linebacker, whether it be running back, offensive line, Giants had a decent offensive line. And not to have backups who actually can mimic what it is that they saw throughout the playoffs or throughout the Super Bowl runs, and, you know, just to get in there and mimic and just show some toughness. I'm an ex-Marsh Waters, and most of the times I got up to actually compete, I had to do a certain type of, I had to elevate myself to a certain type of skill set. You know what I'm saying? And when I look at the Giants today, I don't take nothing away from the Giants. But what I take away from it is that the guys, the professionals, the ones who are getting paid these millions of dollars, even those who are holding out in contracts, you know, trying to pacify themselves, you know, for the love of the money and not so much the love of the game. And I'm not saying that this is a positive outlook in the locker rooms. You know, guys are starting to, you know, do things so differently than what you've seen in the olden days. You know, these guys play for the passion. You know, they built themselves up in childhood to become a man, to play a game that they truly love. And, you know, for the Giants to get out there and do what they did yesterday, you know, where there's nobody smacking each other on a helmet or, you know, giving each other a high five or, you know, telling each other, hey, listen, man, we got to get out here. Now, I wasn't on the sideline, so I don't know. But we have a defensive line, right, that have so much experience, and not to really see that there's a certain type of leadership there, that kind of hurts me, you know what I mean, as an old-time football watcher.
Hey, appreciate it. Go ahead, Naeem. I'm sorry.
And to look at, you know, and even to look at Dean Wilson, you know, this is a young man that's on the rise, man. You know, this kid is going to be awesome. This kid is going to be great. Somewhere, someday, this kid is going to be a great running back.
I appreciate it, Naeem. Thanks for the call, man. I think you summed it up quite well. 201-939-4513. Very frustrating day for Giant fans, obviously. Let's go back to Dallas and say good morning to Bill. Bill, what's going on?
Hey, good morning, guys. Well, the first thing I had to do was get up, take my Giants flag, run it down, and run it up at half mast, upside down. I'm from Brooklyn, so I've been a Giants fan all my life, and I'm just shocked.
It's a good place to grow up, Bill, by the way.
Brooklyn, the best of the five boroughs.
Flatbush Avenue, Church.
All right,
Avenue.
There we go, Bill.
Flatbush and Church, nice. I grew up a few blocks away from where Notion and Flatbush meet at the junction, so we are not far from each other.
And there's still a statue in place where John lived
as well.
Oh,
please.
His legacy continues to live on.
Go ahead, Bill.
Go ahead, Bill. What else you got?
I love David Wilson, but I just don't think he's big enough to be our starting running back. How about if we took that kid Brown and started him?
Well, he's got to get healthy. That's the problem right now, Bill. He got hurt in the preseason, and he's shown that he's
right,
an injury-plagued player. Yeah. I mean, they have every intention of utilizing him more and more. The problem is he needs to stay healthy.
That's right. I had him in number 33 mix.
With Brown and Darrell Scott, you're talking about. Yeah.
Darrell Scott. There you go.
Correct.
Darrell Scott. I mean, every time he carries the ball, he seems to do quite well.
Well, Darrell Scott is productive to a certain degree. I think the biggest problem with him that's holding him back is pass protection, and that was evident yesterday. There were a couple of times where the four-man rush was beating the offensive line. Darrell Scott was supposed to be in position to protect Eli, and they even got past him. So, you know, that's something that he needs to continually improve. There's a reason why Darrell Scott hasn't seen as much time as the other running backs. Number one has been because of pass protection. Number two, remember, Darrell Scott hasn't stayed healthy during the course of his career here.
Well, let me tell you guys, when I go to that gym this afternoon to play racquetball, I am going to take so much BS from all these dumbass Dallas fans.
I appreciate
anyway,
it, Bill.
Well, Bill, hopefully you'll show more fire in your racquetball game than this team did yesterday. We appreciate
That's always there. That's always there.
All right, Bill,
anyway,
thanks a lot.
Hey, thanks a lot. And you know, I listen to you guys all the time, so it's really good. It's almost like being home again.
Thanks, Bill. It's always good to hear from a fellow Brooklynite. I hope you take it to those Texans on the racquetball court. 201-939-4513. Final call of the show. Let's go to Dominic in Pennsylvania. Dominic, what's going on, pal? Dominic, you there?
Dominic, don't leave us hanging here. You got the final word.
Screen one more caller, Ashman. Let's get one more call up and then see who it is, and there'll be final word on the show.
Got to go out on a high note.
I've been trying to go through all these Twitter questions. But,
I've been trying to respond to a handful as
there's,
well.
There's a lot of them, yeah. Rich Mullen, Len couldn't be more wrong. Going after Len. Yesterday was all about being out-schemed. Rich, you're not correct. It was one-on-one blocking, and the Giants' offensive linemen were beaten one-on-one by the opposing defensive linemen. They even left running backs in the chip. They had six guys blocking four. Still couldn't do it. What else do you want them to do?
I was going to say, outside of leaving every wide receiver behind, who is Eli Manning going to throw the football to?
That, I mean...
You need protection.
Rich, you're a good tweeter. I appreciate it, but I have to disagree with that. He points out physical... let me try that again. Hope I can talk. Philosophical changes are needed. Spread offense 3-4 or 5 wide instead of two wide receiver sets allow for quick passes and rely less on the O-line. But the Giants run a whole lot of 3 and 4 wide. One of those four wide is sometimes Brandon Myers, but you have, look, the Giants spread it out. I think the criticism that you do more quick passes, I'll buy that. And we said that at the start of the show. If you have one criticism of Kevin Gilbride, I think that could be one of them coming out of this game. And number two, maybe try a little no huddle in that second quarter to try to mix things up. So I think that's probably a little bit fair. Aaron McGee, we have no identity. O-line, D-line are a complete mess. That's where it all starts. And I think that's a fair point. You win games up front. The Giants are not winning games up front. Even the defensive tackles and the run defense, which has been a strength this year, Lance, as you mentioned earlier in the show, was a weakness yesterday.
Absolutely. You know, listen, across the board, I think there were a lot of weaknesses. We can sit here and single out each and every facet of this team, but as a lot of people have voiced on Twitter, it goes across the board, the blame. The players, the coaches, more so clearly the players, but I think it came down to an execution. It's not really about the scheme, and it's not that they were ill-prepared for the Panthers. It was a matter of guys were being beat one-on-one on all facets of this team, whether it be the offensive line or the defensive line. They couldn't win the battle at the line of scrimmage. If you're not that dominant team in the trenches, as everyone likes to call it, it's going to be very difficult to walk out with a W.
201-939-4513. Let's go back to our phones. Who do we get back up there for the final call of the show? Kevin in Queens. Kevin, what's going on, pal?
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
Doing well, Kevin. What you got?
I'm just saying, I'm a big fan of you guys. I listen to you guys every weekday, you know.
Appreciate
and,
you.
Yeah, man, I'm a big fan. But, you know, I'm really disgusted of the game yesterday, but at the same time, I'm a big fan, and I love those guys the same, and I don't, you know, I think they're going to be okay. I don't think we're going to go 6-10 like we did in 96, and I think we're going to be all right, and I think everybody's going to get it together. I think we're going to go out and have a big game against Kansas City. I think we'll bounce back against them. It seems like we play up the competition, and I think that, you know, they're good competition. I think we'll be able to play up to them, and I think we'll be able to go out there and have a good game. What do you guys think about that?
Well, Kevin, you know, it would not stun me either, and really appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. I brought this up on the post-game show yesterday, and you've heard it a lot on this show with John and I, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You know, that's the best way to describe this team, not just this season, not just last season, the last few seasons. It has been very hard to put your pulse on this team and figure out which team is going to show up each and every week. And I think Kevin brings up a valid point. Last season, I always bring up that game against the Saints. They put up 52 points at MetLife Stadium. What happens after that? Flat against the Falcons, flat against the Ravens. Right now, Giants fans are not seeing a lot of positives after this performance against the Panthers. Would it stun me that they pull a 180 against the Chiefs next week, John?
With the way this team's played, no. But I would be surprised if this offensive line, with the same exact personnel, flips a switch and all of a sudden they're very good next week.
And that's why I was going to get to the next point, which is I think there's a lot more red flags this season than maybe in seasons prior.
No question.
Which is going to make it a lot more difficult for them to pull that 180 week to week. But it is true that despite some of their struggles that are evident across the board, they tend to rise to the occasion against opponents that most experts don't think they stand a chance against. I mean, look at the Niners game last year. They went into San Francisco, and yes, this was the team that they beat in the NFC Championship. I don't think anybody thought they were going to manhandle the Niners the way they did, John, last season, and they wound up doing that.
And John Foster on Twitter, at NH underscore Giants, and at Kelsey and KC, both make a good point. And look, we're putting most of the blame on the players, and I think that's fair. However, when you have a 38-0 debacle, and that's what it was a debacle, on Sunday, the way you had, no one escapes blame there. That goes to the GM, it goes to the coaches, it goes to the players, goes to Lance Meadow. Nobody escapes blame.
Throw me in the mix.
For that performance yesterday, and I think that's a fair point. We're not trying to say that the coaches could have done better. They could have, obviously. Everybody could have done better on Sunday the way that game went. But, and this is our larger point here, folks, you could have had Vince Lombardi with Tom Landry and Bill Walsh and whatever a great head coach you can name, Bill Parcells, on that coaching staff. The way that offensive line blocked, it wouldn't have mattered. Wouldn't have mattered.
David Wilson runs around the edge up the left sideline, gets a touchdown. Is that bad coaching or is that just Will Beattie getting a holding penalty?
And an unnecessary hold, by the way. He committed the holding penalty after Wilson had already gotten by the defensive lineman and turned the corner.
Held on to his guy too long. So I understand you're right, John. It does fall on everybody, and the coach is certainly going to sit back and step back and reevaluate. But, you know, I still get back to the word execution. That's the word that I'm caught up with this morning. They prepare this entire week. They do a lot of film study. You need the players to go out there and prove that they took the information that was laid out for them and they throw it out there on the field. And I just didn't see them doing the latter yesterday against the Carolina Panthers. You know, we could talk about bringing in the best offensive-minded guys, the best defensive gurus. At the end of the day, it's the players that need to deliver. And that just has not come across during the first three games. It's sometimes present for a quarter. It's sometimes present for a drive. It just has never been present for the course of four quarters.
At Lauren Loki, most uplifting part of hashtag Giants chat, Brooklyn Pride.
She summed it up beautifully.
Brooklyn stand up.
You know we're going to back our own Burrow.
No question. By the way, Rich, who we mentioned his tweet before, decided to give us a call. So we're going to go one more caller and say to Rich, he wants to reply to, I'm sure he wasn't a big fan of us disagreeing with him.
Well, he wants
to
go after you, and I'm hoping you're the initial target.
Rich, what's going on, pal? How are you?
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
We're doing great.
Hey, I was just calling to clarify what I meant by being out-schemed there.
Sure.
Well, Rich, John was too hard on you, so take all the time you want to clarify. I'll sit back here.
No, I didn't think it was harsh at all. It was actually understandable. It was beyond the obvious. I mean, we all saw Eli get pummeled yesterday, and offensive line, huge problem. But what I meant by being out-schemed is going into this game, we already know our offensive line has got huge problems, so we have to, you know, work around that schematically. We can't keep going in week after week after week thinking, all right, we're going to establish the run. We're going to try to, this week, have a dominant offensive line. Eventually, you got to realize this is what we got, and this is what we have to work with. You know, let's make some philosophical changes to our offense. Let's realize that our offense is Eli Manning and is our wide receivers. You know, you don't watch Peyton Manning sit there. He's not determined to develop a run game. They put the ball in his hands and let him establish the offense. You know, he can make changes at the line if they want to go to a little you know, a draw play or something of that nature.
Yeah, Rich, Rich, I hear you, but keep in mind, Peyton Manning has three All-Pros in front of him on that offensive line, and Eli Manning has the same ability to change plays the same way Peyton does. If he's reading pressure, if he's reading blitzes, or frankly, he just decides, this offensive line can't protect for me. He can call adjustments at the line of scrimmage, you know, call hot routes where guys break off their deep patterns and either run slants, run stops, run hitches, whatever you want to call them, or whatever the particular pattern and play might call for, and make those adjustments at the line of scrimmage. So as much as you want to get on Kevin Gilbride, and again, I understand the criticism. We agreed with it earlier in the show, and I thought they could have went to a shorter passing game. That also goes on Eli Manning, too. That goes on both those guys.
I agree. You just but when you go out there with a two-wide receiver set, there's only so much you can do, like as far as adjustments at the line of scrimmage and things of that nature. Then,
Once Anoski got hurt, though, Rich, I thought you really didn't see a whole lot of traditional two backs in the backfield. I thought you saw a lot of Randall, Nix, and Cruz on the field at the same time.
And even Murphy was on the field, too. He got a lot more opportunities than he had in the first two games.
There was a little bit of that. You're right. I chuckled a little bit, though, when we went into the second half down significantly. Well, more so into the second half, down significantly and still lining up. There was some two wide receiver sets and still trying to run the ball, and I'm just like, okay. I mean, I get it. I guess at that point we're trying to establish the run for next game or something, but it was disheartening to watch. Can I speak on one thing real quick that I hadn't heard mentioned in the show?
Sure, go ahead.
I was kind of curious as to what you guys think about the effect of Chase Blackburn and Dominic Hixon as far as being able to affect what they knew about our offense and defense, and as to whether or not you think that really had a big impact. Because, I mean, obviously Blackburn's always been a very smart guy. I just wonder how much he could have really, you know, given to their coaches to impact what happened to our team. Because it was like, as been said throughout this entire show so far, it was a just embarrassing loss. And it seemed like they had the upper hand throughout the entire game. So I'm just wondering if maybe, you know, if that had something to do with it.
Well, you're right.
I'll listen to your answer offline.
And appreciate the phone call, and thanks for weighing in on Twitter as well. I think you hit it right on the nose. Chase Blackburn is a very smart, intelligent player. I mean, was that the big difference maker? Is that why they lost 38-0? No, but I'm sure Chase Blackburn knows the tendencies of Eli Manning and the offense because he goes up against them each and every week during practice, and I'm sure shed some light with respect to his teammates on what to expect. It didn't hurt, let's put it that way. Was it the overall difference maker? No. And I don't know how much Dominic Hixon necessarily added to the conversation, but I think both of those players were with this franchise long enough to understand concepts and philosophies. And if you know that and you understand that, you can at least bring something to the table in preparation. So I'm sure the Panthers were well-disciplined and knew from what Chase and Dominic Hixon told them to anticipate this, anticipate that, look for Eli Manning, look for how he goes about his audibles, look at his hand signals. They probably knew a little bit more in terms of the overall picture that the Giants are going to bring to the table. But I'm not going to go so far to say Chase Blackburn and Dominic Hixon is the reason why the Carolina Panthers won 38-0. You know, Greg Hardy executing is a big reason why they won 38-0. The Panthers' defensive scheme is more of a reason. But it doesn't hurt, like I said, when you have two guys that are familiar with what the Giants bring to the table. You know, I would certainly want that as a head coach in Ron Rivera. And I'm sure the defensive coordinator also loved the fact that Chase could bring something new to the forefront and new to the conversation. I just don't think it was the overall turning point to this contest.
I'll tell you what, he played a lot more than he had earlier in the season, though.
He did.
Only had about two defensive snaps, I think. Might have been zero,
He
I think
did not
he had
have
zero
one
defensive snaps.
Snap
I think you're right, before this
games.
Weekend.
He played was a special teams player.
He played a lot for John Beeson in that game yesterday. He really did. He got a lot of snaps on defense, and he was, quite frankly, played pretty well from what I could tell.
Well, and maybe he sold himself in practices based on what he told the coaching staff. And they said, you know what? Forget telling John Beeson about what the Giants are going to do, Chase. We're going to throw you out there, and let's see if you can execute and pick up what Eli Manning's going to do. So it did help, but I'm not going to go so far, John, and I'm curious your thoughts, to say that Chase Blackburn having some knowledge is why they dominated this game yesterday.
Chase Blackburn's advice to the defensive linemen to just dominate the Giants' offensive line worked out real well. No one else would have thought of that.
Yeah. You know, I mean, come on.
So, I mean, Honestly, it wouldn't have mattered. And Mark Tarrant, and this is the last tweet we'll read, we're 3-8 in our last 11 games dating back to last year. Internally, something's wrong and needs to be addressed ASAP. And I ran the numbers here. In the Giants' last six games dating back to last season, they've been outscored 189 to 110. That's minus 79 points. And if you take the Eagles game out of there, which I know is not fair to do, but they were a team that had pretty much mailed it in last year. They knew their coach was on its way out. They were outscored 182 to 68 in five of their last six games, which are all losses. So in their last five losses dating back to last year, the Giants have been outscored by 114 points. And this year they've been outscored by 51. Second worst in the NFL besides the Jacksonville Jaguars.
I mean, you look at the points that you're giving up. You're giving up anywhere from 36 to 41 points every game. If your offense can only put up about 20 to 25 points, you know, that's not a recipe for success. Because remember, all of those points that the Giants have put up is not necessarily due to their offense. It's due to sometimes some favorable field possession and some defensive plays that at least shorten the playing field. But across the board, you know, the defense, special teams, and offense has contributed to those 36 to 41 totals. And that means that you have to either play catch-up each and every game. And if you don't have enough energy and you don't have enough fire with this team, you're not overcoming those type of deficits. So it should be no surprise that they're 0-3 based on the number of points that they've surrendered.
No doubt about it. I would ask you for final thoughts, but I think we've said all we need to say about this game. And we'll say more about it tomorrow. Big Blue Kickoff Live comes your way every morning during the week, Monday through Friday at 9:30 on Giants.com. Lance and I will be back with you tomorrow. We'll start the transition a little bit to the Chiefs game, but we'll still do all the reaction you want to do on Giants and Panthers. Of course, the Giants will talk in the locker room shortly. We'll have that for you on Giants.com. Make sure you check it out. Roman Oben will be in later in today, subbing for Sean O'Hara. We'll go through some coaches' tape, break down some plays, and we'll get his opinion on the game as well. I'm sure you saw him on the post-game show on Channel 9 yesterday as well. Lance, fun time as always. I'll see you tomorrow morning.
Absolutely. Sounds good.
For Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmelk. Thanks for listening. Make sure you check out Giants.com all day long for more reaction to the 38-0 loss to the Carolina Panthers. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Have a good one.
Have a good one.